What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining us, the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, the one and only Gene Glenn. He was a played professional baseball for a long time, coming out of Mankato State, and then was a coach for a long time in Big League. How long were you a coach in Big League Baseball, Gino?
17 seasons.
17 seasons. What was your first job? Who hired you for your first Big League job?
Don Baylor and Bob Gebhardt in Colorado.
Sure, and Gebby had a connection to Mankato, right?
Right on, yeah. Geb lived in Mankato, went to Iowa State, grew up in western Minnesota.
Lamberton, yeah.
Yeah, Sanborn, Lamberton, and then left the Expos where I first went, and he was the guy that got me in baseball. But then he left in 80, at the winter of 86 and came to the Twins with Andy McPhail, and you guys, the Twins won the World Series in 87.
Yep, the famous line where at the end of the year, Gebhardt says, "We were just trying to get the damn thing organized. And we ended up winning the whole thing."
Well, it's funny about that year. You know, he knew Jeff Reardon from Montreal.
Oh, sure, because he had the Montreal director. Connection. Yep.
Yeah, and then that's how Al Newman got there.
Sure.
And Sal Butera ended up there, who I was playing with in AAA that year. He ended up in Minnesota. So that connection with Geb leaving Montreal and coming to Minnesota led to. You know, there was another pitcher, too, that came, I believe, later on that they got. But that slips my mind right now. But I know those three guys came over. But Reardon and Newman, like, right away that winter during spring training or in a trade that winter.
Now what was the connection? Because didn't he get a number, besides yourself, Mankato State players, into the Montreal system?
Joe Leppel was a catcher that went into the Expo system.
Just ran into him recently, yep.
Yeah, Mike Carroll played in the minor leagues for a little while.
Mike, I played against Mike in Town Ball. He played at New Ulm later. But, yeah, he's the hockey coach now down at Gustavus.
Yeah, and he was the baseball coach for many years at Gustavus. Jeff Schugel did not sign. He was with the Cubs. I think that was the only other. Us three, I think, were with Montreal. And I'm not exactly sure if Geb got all three, but he was around at that time, you know, living in Mankato in the off season, and so I think he and Dean Boyer too, and they used to run a camp, a professional baseball camp in the summer there. I didn't never attend it, but they were all pretty close around there, so they knew the area.
Lots of good baseball talk for sure. Now, Gene, what's it like to be a team that's contending for a division title when you get to August? The trades have been made. What's a vibe like in a clubhouse when you get to this part of the season?
I don't think there's anything better because you put yourself in a position in July to trade for players, which they have, especially we're talking about Minnesota now. But any place I've been, when you're in July, and people sometimes say, you know, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And that's true. But if you don't start well, you're not adding to your team in July. You're actually selling. And to anybody out there that added good players and pitching, they played really well the first half or over half the games to get in a position where their ownership and front office knows that if they had some key guys that this could be an exciting, even though it's exciting, it could be an impactful year for the organization.
But to your point, I mean, the year that you made the playoffs when you were on Paul Molitor's staff, it looked like you were out of it at the trade deadline, according to some, and they traded Kinsler and some good players and didn't expect the resuscitation that came about that led you to a one-game playoff in New York, correct?
Right, but if you remember that year, and I'm just going back, but you take Polanco, Sano, Buxton, and Kepler, and Escobar, I don't know if you... Them five guys came on, and especially I think Buxton, Kepler, Polanco, and Escobar. Them guys came on, and you couldn't have traded Rosario in the mix, too. You couldn't have traded for players that would have excelled like they did the last 2 months of that
season.
Good point.
They're just hitting their stride.
They just, they stepped up, and these guys got hot, and they were impact bats, you know, at the end of the season. And I don't know if you could have traded for anybody that would have come in there and done what they did.
That's a great point. You know, one day, sitting out there with you, you talk about Polanco, and he's young in his career, and he's playing shortstop for you. And I asked you, you know, about some of the players, and he said, watch this kid, Polanco. He's got soft hands and light feet, the two things you need for a middle infielder. I would add to that, and I don't know if it was there when you saw it right away or if it's evolved as he's become a veteran, but every at-bat he competes really hard, doesn't he? I mean he's not, if it's 3-2, whatever, he will battle you in every at-bat.
He's, yeah, and you've seen it, Mike. I know you did, but Jorge is one of those just true baseball players that is good in the first inning just like he is in the ninth. You know, it's not going to change who he is by who he's facing, or it's a one-run game or a tie game. And believe me, those are the players that are out there. And I'm not saying there's not more talented players, but this guy is really talented with a great makeup and mindset to compete both offensively, defensively. And to me, he was a really heads-up base runner. I'm just glad. He became what we were all hoping, because he's a great guy, number one. And he's grown into be that real stable and steady player.
Yeah, Sano, obviously, you know, people remember this or not. When he first came up, it was a comet, man. He the way he hit when he first came up and got called up in the midst of it, you know, it's a little bit forgotten because the season wasn't going that well. And obviously he's seen his ups and downs ever since. What did you see when he came up, and what do you see now that holds him back?
Well, I thought the number one thing he had was his bat. He hit to all fields. He hit for a nice average, and he didn't have to try and hit home runs. It just happened when he made good contact because how strong he was. He was a serious worker. He wanted to get better at third base. We all knew that he was going to be an impact bat with his power, but we didn't know how many home runs he'd hit, because, I don't know, we just liked that he hit. But somehow over the years, you know, and players do that, they get so caught up in home runs. Sometimes they just swing and miss too often trying to make that one at bat, you know, be a difference in the game. But I don't know. I just thought he was a real nice third baseman. He was one of the best guys coming in on a ball, you know, a slow roller and throw the barehanded throw it across the field, just like Vinny Casilla was in Denver. And, God, this guy just had, and he still has, you know, it's just a lot of potential with an impact ability to change the game.
Eddie Rosario at that time, too, I remember being down in minor leagues when he was coming up, they talked about Sano and him, and they said, you know, they talked about the grinders versus the naturals, and they put Sano and Rosario in the latter because they said it just makes a different sound when he hits the ball, which is an old saying, right, for people. If it makes a different sound, you got something special there when you can swing the bat. But he had some of that as well at that point in time. And I see he had a big game, big week last week for Atlanta, so he's still around and doing well, but did he have that certain swagger, that certain something too?
Eddie was always special because he believed in himself so much.
Mm-hmm.
He was just overflowing in confidence. Now, he'd make you pull your hair out once in a while because he ran around the bases like his hair was on fire. But you really never knew what he was going to do, but he always knew what was going on in the game. Eddie was a very intelligent, good player, very talented, but you know, I credit Joe Leppel for his success in the minor leagues and getting through, because Leppel was always behind him, pushing him. And when he went from outfield to infield and back to the outfield, no matter what Eddie was going through on or off the field, you know, they had his back because they really seen something special in him. And you know what? He grew up, he is that type of player, and baseball people see an impact guy there, both on both sides of the ball, and really as a base runner too. So, you know, this guy's like a five-tool guy. He hits for power, hits for average, he throws, he runs, you know, he fields, and you don't think of that, but he's doing it every day.
Now, Buxton, if we could see him healthy for a whole year, what were your interpretation of him when he first came up, And what do you see right now in terms of what he could be, what he might be? How do you forecast a guy like this?
Well, to answer one of those questions is, when we see Buck, when he's healthy, he's one of the best in the game, and maybe one of the best, you know, with his build, his speed, the type of heart he shows you on defense in the outfield. And a lot of those injuries are because of 100% effort given. Even if it's running to first and maybe tweaking a hamstring or a calf or something. But, you know, he's just electrifying. He's so much fun to watch play. And I'd almost rather see him run down a ball and throw it than be at the plate. Mm-hmm. But yet he's grown into a hitter with, you know, we know he's got big power. And I remember that day in Toronto, he hits like two home runs. And I think he had another hit. We're going on to the, you know, down the stretch for the playoffs. And believe me, he was one of the most impactful guys on that team at that moment in time in that season. That it was just so exciting to watch. So when you've seen Buck play day in and day out for not just a series, but maybe like 3 weeks to a month, you know how special he is. So if he stays healthy, who knows the numbers that he might put up. But the greatest thing about him, too, though, he impacts the game in so many ways. It's not just one-dimensional. And, you know, I look back, you know, them guys, a lot of those guys were drafted when I first came to the Twins in 12 and then shortly after or already there. But they really did a good job when they drafted that nucleus of guys to have such a variety of people in different size and shape and athletic ability all come together at one time. And you remember, Mike, there was a few times we actually started nine Minnesota Twins that were drafted by the Twins in the big leagues.
Yeah, it was an incredible stat at that time.
Yes.
In fact, it would be an incredible stat because you never see it anywhere.
I know it. And, you know, you could go as like Maurer and Dozier and Polanco and Sano and maybe Rosario and, you know, Buxton, Kepler, Garver maybe was catching at that time. And who knew who was on the mound? But even if it was Gibson or Berríos or someone before that, it could be Perkins at the end of the game closing it, you know. So there were times in there that I think what everybody wanted to do in baseball, Terry Ryan and his group, and, you know, it'll happen again somewhere. But I hadn't seen that hardly anywhere I had been. And to really recognize that, to see nine guys start in the big leagues that were all drafted by the same organization. Because sometimes players get traded and they come through the system and end up starting.
Right, but they were in the minor leagues, but they got traded in the minor leagues.
Right. They weren't drafted by that team. And here in Minnesota, the vision they had, they knew and they developed them. And by God, they got that same year that we ended up going to the playoffs with multiple times we started nine guys from the original drafted Twins.
Gene, I know you get asked this question a lot, and it's changed a little bit this year because the ball's not traveling like it did a couple of years ago. But do you like this swing for the fence, this all-or-nothing approach, or do you like the get him on, get him over, get him in?
Well, I think, like I said earlier, I think the recognition of a guy, how he can impact the game, you have to give him that freedom. But it's also about all of us, not only the, you know, let's say it's 25 guys on the team. It's the staff. It's the fans. It's the ownership. When it comes down to winning a game, you'd like to, you know, and I come from that kind of maybe the older school, even though I'm thinking of older guys than me that might not even be here anymore, how they pass this down. But when players used to recognize situations and be able to execute to help you win a one-run game late, God, that was as much fun as a guy hitting a home run.
Uh-huh.
You know, to win the game. A guy maybe get a single or walk and a pass ball, he goes to second, we move him over, and the next thing you know, you might even squeeze him in, or just a sack fly wins the game. But we used to give credit to the person that actually executed a fundamental to make it all happen. And you could be 0-for-4 and actually get a guy over from second to third late in the game and feel like you truly helped win that game.
Last question. If you knew a kid that was 20 years old, they'd just been drafted, and maybe they're, you know, 195 pounds, and they can go one or two ways. They could stay at 195 and kind of be sleek and athletic, or they can go up to 215 and swing for the fences and try to get through the minor leagues that way. What would you tell them?
Well, I would tell them, make sure you be who you are first. Try not to be somebody else. And that, I've seen guys try and gain weight and hit more home runs. Well, if you're a good hitter, be a good hitter. If you're a power guy, you know, go ahead. But I would tell them, believe in yourself like you have. You've proven to everybody what kind of player you are. And you're going to get better. So keep up with the competition and don't give in. If your power comes, fine. But if not, you're going to make an impact in the game somehow. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here.
All right, Gino. I hope I see the state amateur tournament. You know, next week they're honoring all the former MVPs of the amateur tournament. And your buddy Greg Odegaard and his son both won it. And they're going to be at a big banquet. And Terry Steinbach and Jim Eisenreich. And it sounds like it'll be a real who's who of baseball names.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Hold of Odie. He'll tell you, but it's in Faribault next week.
How about Lou Olson? Is he in that group? Did he ever win an MVP?
He might be in that. I don't know if he won an MVP or not. It's harder. I don't remember who won. You know, I remember great players, but I don't remember who won MVPs and who didn't.
Yeah. Well, you got to be on that list, Mike.
I should have been, but we lost in the first round. Otherwise, I would have been.
Oh, man. I sure miss you, though. I miss all the
I miss you, too, buddy. And I look forward to seeing you hopefully again one time someplace soon.
Yeah, it's great. All right. Well, Mike, thanks so much.
You bet. Gene Glenn, nice enough to join us.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.